The Orb, Volume 1, Number 6. Charity. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. This episode completes a trilogy on faith, hope, and charity, a phrase referenced from the Holy Bible, 1 Corinthians 13:13. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. To get started, we need to understand a little about translation. As you likely know, the text of the Bible was not originally written in English. It took centuries and the Reformation to bring the language of the Church of Rome into the common tongues. There is a long and violent history to the translation of the Bible into English that I will leave with you as homework. The faithfulness of the text to the original leaves considerable room for controversy. One thing in particular is important to us. The word charity in the King James text is often replaced by the word love in other versions. Having established that context, I'm going to be talking about charity in two forms, as virtue and as practice. Charity as virtue means a boundless, loving kindness toward others. And in spite of the saying charity begins at home, it is typically applied to strangers. Charity as practice means benevolent giving. To refine that a little, benevolent means the giving is done with goodwill, the intent to do good rather than to make a profit. The core difference resides in the motive of the action. The virtue is to be motivated to kindness by love. Love, in this context, is not emotional love. This time, it must be by choice, made on purpose, to be loving. Charity as virtue is the will to be kind for no other reason than love. A final look at the Simplified Catechism of the Catholic Church advises that charity purifies and raises human love to the perfection of God's love. By charity, we love God for his own sake, and our neighbor as ourselves for the love of God. Christ demands that we love everyone, especially our enemies, our neighbors, and the poor. St. Paul says that love is patient and kind, believing, helping, and enduring all things. Love is not jealous, boastful, arrogant, rude, irritable, or resentful. Charity is benevolent, disinterested, and generous, bringing forth friendship and communion. Love is the goal. Once we reach it, we shall find rest. St. Augustine.
It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. If you have to give one to your friend, if you have three, give one to your friend and me. It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. If you have one, here is something you can learn. Still share just by taking turns. If you've got a ball, bounce it to the gang. If there is a new kid, invite him out to hang. If you've got one sandwich, cut that thing in half. If you know a secret joke, tell it and share a laugh. One drumstick, give one to your friend. Make one beautiful rhythm, share a beat that never ends. And if you're feeling lonely, share time with your mom. Share some milk and cookies and sing the sharing song.
Everybody knows.
It's always more fun to share with everyone.
to share with everyone.
Yes, it is.
It's always more fun to share with everyone.
Share a beat now.
I am struggling to understand why some people respond harshly to the kindness of others, particularly when the recipient of the gift is a third party. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. On June 2, 2011, the Orlando Sentinel reported that three members of the group Orlando Food Not Bombs were arrested for violating a city ordinance when they fed homeless people in Lake Eola Park. I posted a link to the Facebook wall of the Rachel Maddow Show, expressing my hope that they pick up the story. That post received a reply from a third party. Quote, "Hope she does too. The more stories we hear about stupid do-gooders, the better." Unquote. This respondent lives in Hoboken, New Jersey, so he has no direct involvement in the situation in Orlando. I wrote to him, asking him to help me understand his position. And although he expressed an interest in corresponding, unfortunately he did not follow through. I can only make guesses at what lies behind this negative position on the charity of others, both by my correspondent and the Orlando authorities. The ordinance is intended to prohibit group feedings in public parks. In this instance, the group fed 40 people. I appreciate the interest of civic government in protecting public spaces from being, even temporarily, taken over for a particular group. The ordinance does allow groups to obtain up to 2 permits per year per park within a 2-mile radius of City Hall. That there is an association with City Hall suggests the ordinance is also related to political sensitivity. By feeding the homeless in the shadow of City Hall, there is a political statement that the government has failed to meet the basic needs of its citizens. What is the mandate of government to alleviate the deprivations of its poor? I'll come back to this later. For the moment, let's get back to the negative reactions of individuals. Another online exchange I encountered started with a discussion of the requirement in Florida, why is it always Florida, that welfare recipients must pass a drug test to receive benefits. The conversation included the following abridged exchanges, using pseudonyms. Cameron: they could always reward a fail with a mandatory drug rehab program in order to continue receiving the welfare. Then at least it's doing something good. I don't, however, think the cost of the drug test should be refunded. Nothing should ever be free. This poses the question, who pays for the mandatory rehab? We are talking about people applying for welfare. I should note that Cameron is a Canadian and may be taking universal health care for granted. Cameron continued, it's one of the problems with society. It's too politically incorrect to actually expect something from everyone. Our society breeds laziness, it seems. Unless we can counteract that, we'll never get anywhere with the homeless. Morgan: it's not an easy situation. People have been working for decades trying to solve this problem, but it's riddled with mental issues, drug problems, and a host of other issues. This exchange highlights 2 key points. The first, the view of the poor as lazy. The second, that destitution in our society has myriad roots. Laziness affects some, but most suffer from untreated mental health problems, drug addictions, and sometimes just plain old hard luck. Cameron: and yes, I deleted a bunch of posts just now. I'm sick and tired of people defending the homeless. They need help. They're offered it on multiple fronts. All they end up doing, most of the time, is sticking their hand out and saying, give, give, give. It's sad, but help is there, and most of the time they just choose not to take it. It's the reality of most of the homeless I've come across, hence my standpoint. You can never be one-sided in something like this. There are always special cases, special circumstances, etc. But someone who gets hooked on oxy from a back injury is a far cry from a street punk who steals to get his fix, then complains he can't get welfare. I used to give to the homeless all the time. But why did I stop? Because if I didn't have something on me at the time, they would literally try to spit on me, like it was their right to freebies. I suspect that Cameron had 1 or 2 experiences of aggressive begging and has exacted group punishment in retaliation. This is sad, but I'm not going to make him wrong for his decision to stop giving. What troubles me is the negative view he holds of anyone else that continues to give. Why should he make me wrong if I choose to be charitable, in spite of some negative experiences with a few? Recalling St. Paul, love is patient, enduring all things. Love is not irritable or resentful. Cameron, I can almost guarantee that if you took every homeless person downtown, cleaned them up, gave them fresh clean clothes, and pointed them to easy work where they could start earning money and get paid that very day, over 90% of them would go right back to begging. It sounds harsh, but if they don't want to help themselves when the help is given, why should we, the taxpayers, be forced to spend money trying? This is adopting the position that the poor are inherently lazy, ignoring the fact that mental illness, physical disability, or other health or child care issues may prevent the person from taking work. The challenges of the poor are many, and there must be as many different solutions. We need to address access to mental health treatment, addiction treatments, and child care. We need to address the availability of affordable housing, and we need to create more jobs. And until all of that happens, we need to feed the hungry, house the homeless, and comfort the sick. There are real human needs that must be met. Whose task is it to meet those needs? Churches have long held the role, as it is core to the love of God, to be charitable. Whether this charity is the values kind or the practical kind varies, and for the recipients is of little concern. If, to get fed, they have to stay for the sermon, it may seem a small price to pay. Is it appropriate for business to be charitable? Typically, they are not, in the true sense, charitable. Most businesses that give something to the community do so with the expectation of getting credit, a sponsorship, naming rights, or an advertising campaign to proclaim their loving-kindness. Often the gift amounts to barely 20% of what is spent on the ad campaign. Again, for the recipients, this is better than if the business just advertised and didn't give anything away. I can understand that business gives with the intention of making a greater return. It's an investment. After all, a corporation has a legal fiduciary obligation to act in the interests of the shareholders. Few shareholders express to the board that their interest is in helping others. Finally, back to the mandate of government to be charitable. Just as business answers to shareholders, government answers to voters, most of which are taxpayers. Here, however, the interests are considerably more diverse. Some taxpayers oppose spending their tax money on social programs, others support it. Some parties favor the collective well-being of society, while others want to reward individual achievement and encourage personal responsibility. There is a broad spectrum of policy to choose from. On the one hand, there is a view that charity should flow from the individual through non-governmental bodies, whether faith-based or not. This typically coincides with advocacy for personal responsibility. Each can exercise their own judgment as to who is deserving and who is not, who is qualified to help and who is not, and what nature that help should take. It becomes a free market of needs finding sponsors. If your deprivation fails to find a champion, clearly your need is not severe enough, your deprivation not deep enough to warrant charity. The sufferer may be viewed as responsible for their position, so they should bear the responsibility for their own recovery. On the other side, there is a view that civil society can only exist when basic human dignity is protected. The state has a responsibility to protect the weak and give succor to the needy. This is best handled with policies that promote a strong economy with widespread opportunity, but also with a bedrock of social services to provide care for the health and well-being of those that fall. When such policies are lacking, class divisions arise, and should they grow severe enough, social bonds break. The breakdown may start as criminal behavior by the needy to acquire the barest necessities of life. If allowed to continue, if government simply gets tough on crime, the social decay worsens. At a sufficient level of suffering among a large enough population, the need for dignity drives the masses to pick up torches and pitchforks. Revolutions are made of this. Governments try to find a balanced set of policies to satisfy most of the people most of the time. The pendulum swings. As the economic waves rise and fall, voters express themselves more forcefully on one side or the other. Democracy is surprisingly good at keeping the pendulum from swinging too far. When a government stops listening, when it pursues either policy to extremes, that government is reminded where power originates. This is usually handled fairly peacefully. Now back to the question, does government have a mandate to be charitable? I believe they have a mandate to nurture civil society. Just what it takes to maintain a satisfactory level of dignity to preserve civility depends on the culture. Just what it takes for you to maintain your own dignity, your humanity, is for you to decide. How bad can it get before you cry for help? How good can you stand it before you have to give something back? Where do you find equanimity?
Well, I thought that we all care about peace. And I thought that we'd all cry about love and loss. And I thought that we were somehow holding on, but I'm just standing here. No one should have to live all of their life on their own. No one should have to live all of their life on their own. Every time I think about what I can do, it just slips away. And every time I think that we can make things work, well, it just slips away. And I turn on the news and there's always some dude who's relentlessly bringing me down, telling me how there are too many dark people out there who'll never be found. Well, no one should have to live all of their life on the run. No one should have to live all should have to live that sort of life. And I think it's time that we all learn forgiveness. And I can't believe
do when the need is overwhelming. Quote, I am only one, but I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something, and I will not let what I cannot do interfere with what I can do. Edward Everett Hale. Is an individual act really any help at all? Newfoundland filmmaker Christopher Richardson pursued this question as part of his documentary, Where's My Goat? Like many others, his company, Henge Productions, hands out swag to his clients. Traditionally, these are items with the company name and logo, such as pens, mugs, t-shirts, or other, let's face it, throwaway items. Christopher wanted to find something less wasteful and genuinely helpful, so he adopted the practice of donating a goat through Plan Canada in the name of his client. As some clients questioned whether or not there really was a goat being given to someone, and whether the giving was having the intended effect, Christopher decided to make a film of his quest to go to Zambia and find a goat that he had donated for a client. Along the way, he encounters both supporters and detractors of the ethical gift concept.
In some ways, when you talk about goats to villages in Zambia, it's like the saying, you take coal to Newcastle.
It's also a journey where I witness the collision of charity and ethics. There are people who want a goat but don't have one. There are people who have goats and want to pass them on. There are people who think goats are a bad idea.
Lots of people buy into this crap, and it's tragic. And I think it's very important that there is, you know, another view given. Not least, you know, what people really want in terms of their development needs, as opposed to what makes people here feel good. I mean, this is about Western feel good. It's not about serious development.
And then there are people who think goats are the greatest.
Happy, happy, I'm very happy.
But sorting through who's right and who's not so right can be tricky when all you really want to find out is, where's my goat?
The transcript of an interview with Christopher Richardson is posted on the Plan Canada website. Quoting from that interview, "A lot of us went into the film thinking, well, this is probably a good thing, but how much impact can it really have? And I think we came out with the feeling that while the purchase of one charitable gift, in this case a goat, won't change the world, it can really change someone's world. When you are on the ground and dealing one-on-one with people, and you see the difference that something like an animal can make to a family, and the choices it can open up for them, it would be impossible for most people to walk away from that experience thinking it wasn't a good thing. It isn't the same experience for us to say, we gave a donation on your behalf to a charity, as it is to say, as a thank you for your business, a family in Zambia will be getting a goat, which will offer them a source of food and income, which will greatly improve their standard of life. Besides that, buying a goat for someone is definitely a real conversation starter. It opens up the opportunity for a larger conversation about aid in general. Now when I get a coffee mug, pan, or a golf ball from a company, I think, that could have been some mosquito nets or a chicken. What it hammered home for me was the fact that we have such complicated and fast-paced lives in the West. We're all so busy and short on time. Something like foreign aid can seem large and complex, but there is an opportunity to think of it in terms of finding one or two small changes we can each make so we are contributing to a solution rather than perpetuating a problem. It might be as simple as seeing this film and buying a goat for someone during the holiday season. For you, it may be a small interruption to your routine, but to the recipient family, it can mean a life-altering event, and that's pretty powerful. When asked about his clients' reactions now that they are aware of the project, Christopher responded, "Now, before we even get to the end of a project, some of the clients ask, hey, by the way, I'm going to get a goat, right? Goats and chickens have become a client expectation." John D. Rockefeller said, "Charity is injurious unless it helps the recipient to become independent of it." To this I say, although an act may not help someone to independence, if it helps them survive into another day, there is hope. The Canadian politician and Christian evangelical Stockwell Day, speaking at the Conservative Party convention on June 9, 2011, said, "You don't take care of people in need by taking prosperity away from everyone else. I find this singularly uncharitable." I would answer by paraphrasing a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. Don't ask yourself, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But as the Good Samaritan did, reverse the question. If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? As individuals, the vast majority of people are genuinely caring and charitable. When we see a starving child, our hearts bleed for them. We wish an end to their suffering. Many make personal donations to organizations we trust to provide help in the remote places we cannot act. Sometimes these places are parts of our own cities where we may fear to tread. In the words of Winston Churchill, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. The Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.